Hey, what is up? What's happening? What's going on? All right, so we got a couple minutes, so I just figured you can drop me a hey, hello, and I'll give it a few minutes, respond to you, answer some questions. By the way, next week is our last week, and I'll be doing the Q&A next week. All right, what's up, Katrina? What's up, Paul? Kim? Melanie? Shirley? Jennifer? Jeff? Is it Veronique? Veronique? Did I say that right? Marty? Brian? What's going on? What's going on? I know. Hard to believe. Next week, last week. I know it. What's up, Prawson? No volume. Everyone else can hear. How do we get this shirt? So this is the Inner Circle shirt. So if you're in Inner Circle, bug your coach or ask in the group, and I think you can get them. I don't know. My camera is on. Yes. Right. Oh, good point. Can we still get the test shirts? You know, we normally open those back up, and I should probably do that. Does anyone want to purchase a test shirt that didn't get a chance to? Okay, I see several people. Where the heck were you when we were selling them? Okay. Hey, one thing we need to do is we need to offer the test shirt in test one more time. And so let me know how we do that. Right. Grateful for people that I can just send that to. And we'll get on it. All right. Awesome. Out of money? I understand. Don't buy it. I mean, if you're low on money, don't buy a t-shirt. Okay. Some people are saying no volume, but it's like three people. Everyone else in here? All right. Well, we got tonight's heavy hitting. Heavy hitting. This is going to blow your mind, especially if you've never been in any of my team building kind of trainings or anything, or if I've never spoken for your company or whatever. This is going to blow your mind. It's going to be power. All right, let's get it started. All right, so tonight we're going to be talking about team building and duplication from session seven. So session seven was speaking and presenting. Remember, it was just last week. 100% of the biggest wins in my life have come from being out of my comfort zone and moving forward before I was ready. By the way, I'm not unique to that. That's every person I know that's succeeded in anything. Your mistake is waiting until you're ready or thinking that someone's going to come don you and say, now you are ready, move forward. You have to make that decision. No one else is going to make it for you. If you rely on others to make it for you, it'll never happen. And you will stay right where you are in your life. You're most likely going to suck, like I did, before you get good at anything you're new at doing. So your first reels probably gonna suck. Your first, live video probably gonna suck. Your first presentation probably gonna suck. But beyond Suckville is you have the potential and possibility of getting better. Okay. Speaking and presenting, they're the highest impacting skills you can learn. I shared last week, I mean, biggest audience I spoke to live, not virtual, was 27,000 people. But I've spoken, quite a few times to over 10,000 people. And so that's how you get to impact a lot of people, man. You can, one-on-one it and help a lot of people for sure, no doubt. you start getting the one to many, one to 1,000, one to 2,000, one to 10,000, one to 20,000, you're talking about pretty massive impact that you have the possibility of making when you really work at your craft there. And so I hope you got benefit from last week. All right, let's jump into the week seven winners, chicken dinners. We got Hadass, our good friend Hadass. Congratulations. We got Tiffany, way to go. We got Holly. I think I saw Holly said she wasn't going to be on tonight, but Holly, maybe someone can tag her and she'll watch the replay faster. And we got, my screen is cut off. Ah, hold on. We got Marlene. We got Marlene. Sorry about that. Sorry, Marlene. All right, we got Marlene and we got, okay. For Veronique. Veronique, am I saying that right? I actually practiced it. Did I say it right? I hope so. Okay. Jane, everyone else can hear. Sorry, maybe logged out and back in, ? Okay. All right. So what did they win? Congratulations to these five winners. They get two prizes. They get one of our 90-day journals. I don't know what color. Don't quote me on that. No idea what we have in stock. But you get one of our 90-day journals. We'll ship out to you. And they each get to submit one question to me. So one question that you have, send it to Mary Kate. What I'll probably do so that you all benefit is do an audio or a video answering all five questions. And so get your question to Mary Kate. Get your address to Mary Kate, or maybe she already has it. I don't know. And we'll send you out that 90-day journal. So way to go. All right, congrats. So here's how to change your life. Before we get started, if you want to change your life, you got to change the way you show up. You got to change your personality, perhaps. You got to change what you're looking to prove. You have to change your participation. Now, if you didn't see the video, okay, if you didn't see the video that I posted in Top Earner Success School, one, you should watch it. But if you didn't enter it, guess how many entered last week's contest? So we have, 1,500 in the, okay. If you watched the video, you don't guess, bunny bunnies. But if you didn't watch the video I posted in Top Earner Success School, what's your guess? How many people do you think entered last week's contest? Okay, so Braun says 127. Christine says 150. Holly says 200. Heidi says 225, 130, 75, 205, 99, 550, 301, 320. Okay, the answer, 15. 15 people. So you paid for this program. And you get a challenge that, the challenge was to share two tips, okay, from what you learned. So not an arduous challenge. It wasn't, run 6 miles. It wasn't, go dig an acre plot of land. It wasn't do the one chip challenge. You guys know about that? My son, for his birthday, him and his brother, my two sons, did the one chip challenge. So a jalapeno is 9,000 Scoville. This chip was 2 million Scoville as far as height. Okay. So I filmed the whole thing. It's on my Instagram. But they did the challenge where they ate this chip, 2 million Scoville, and they both were like crying and tears, and one was balled up on the couch, right? So I'm not, these challenges just ain't that hard. They're just not that hard. The way to enter the challenge, not that hard. But 15 people, 15 entered the contest. And here we are entering the, next week's the last week. And so how are you going to show up out there, man, if that's how you show up in here? And so let me go back. So, I don't make any more if you participate at the highest level. But your life will change if you do. Your life will absolutely change if you start showing up more. So many people are jealous of the people at the top. But this is yet more evidence that the reason the people are at the top is because they did the stuff that people don't want to do. They entered the contest. They played the game. They showed up. That's the difference. And, you know, don't misunderstand me. I'm not mad. I'm not mad at you. How dare you? I understand you. There was a time in my life where I played so small that I didn't believe I could win anything. I didn't believe that anyone that I was in, I didn't think I was important. Definitely didn't think, not only did I not think I was special, I thought I was stupid. And through a series, and a lot of this actually came from last week, through a series of decisions that I made throughout my life, a lot of which we covered last week, I started showing up differently. I started playing bigger. And I started to get out of my comfort zone. And so your life is not going to change based on how many books you consume, right? You know, no matter how many books you consume, it just isn't going to matter. It's just not going to matter if you keep your same personality that shows up small. And so kudos to you. If you entered last week, you had a 30% chance of winning. 30% chance of winning. 30%, because we picked 5 out of 15, you know? And so, again, I'm not mad. I just understand that your life is not going to freaking change unless you start to change how you show up. And I don't know, maybe it's been too long, but do you remember my definition of an imposter? My definition of an imposter is not someone who posts videos before they're perfect, is not someone that shares parenting tips even though they doubt their own parenting. That's not an imposter. An imposter is someone that claims that they want to impact other people and they want to make a difference while they're on this planet and they refuse to face their fears. That's an imposter. Just don't say it. Don't say you want to impact people. Don't lie to us, right? Say, I'm only going to impact people if it's in my comfort zone. I'm only going to help others if it's in a way that I like to do. Okay, that would be not an imposter. That would be, yeah, thank you for being honest. You're being honest now. Don't say that you want to change the world if you're not willing to face your fears. Don't say you want to impact humanity. Don't say that you want to cease human suffering. Don't say that you want to fix this planet if you're not willing to face your fears and you're not willing to show up bigger. Don't even say it. Don't bother saying it. And I'm saying this to you because I only got this week and next week, and then you're off in the wild. You're off in the forest, consuming other trainers and all that stuff, whatever that looks like. You ain't in here. And so I would not be worth my salt if I didn't try to encourage you in the most direct way possible of showing up differently. And so I hope you do, because this is the chance to change your life. You're here for a reason. Of all the courses, of all the videos, of all the trainers, of all the different things that you could be doing right now, you're listening. These words are falling upon your ears. And you're either taking them in or you're rejecting them and saying, he doesn't understand. I didn't feel good last week, right? I know that you got an excuse. I know it. I know that there's an excuse. I got it. And you'll just keep justifying. Keep justifying why you're not playing bigger. Keep justifying why you're not showing up. Keep justifying why other people succeed more than you. And you're going to keep getting what you wish. You're going to keep getting what you're guaranteeing yourself that you're going to prove correct. And so I hope that's helpful. I hope it is. Okay, that's it. I don't want to talk about it. All right, mindset and update. So stop battling your higher self. This is something I learned just in this, just since Saturday. So I have not, just so you know, I have not arrived. I am not perfect. I'm not my highest self. I am constantly working on myself every day, hour and a half minimum meditation. Every day I have certain, you know, affirmations. I have certain things that I do to improve myself every single day. And because of that dedication, there are weeks where I have a breakthrough. This is one of them. Some weeks I have multiple. And so I realized that I've been battling my higher self because of my personality. So two things about my personality around eating, okay? So, you know, although I've been pretty good this last year, prior to that, my entire life, I've been up and down, up and down. So 255, 210, 230, 203, 215, 225, 203. 203 was kind of a stopgap for me for a long, long time. And so this last year I've been between 195, 200. So that's been my new stopgap, right? But we're moving past that because now I understand why. So number one, because of my abuse as a kid, I was starving all the time. I mean, I was skin and bones. I would steal food from, you know, the house that I lived in, and I'd have to, you know, sneak it. And I don't mean like sweets and stuff. I mean, I think I shared with you, I stole a frozen burrito, and I was just starving, and I laid it out on rocks. You know, I lived in Indiana. It wasn't like it's that hot out. And so I laid it out on rocks and I ate it way too prematurely, and it was absolutely disgusting. But because of some of those experiences, a program was created that eating equals freedom. And so even though I'm aware of it, I've battled that, right? Because even though I'm aware that eating equals freedom, eating still equaled freedom. And so whenever I thought I earned something good, or I thought I could, if I wanted to relax, eating was the key. Until I realized on Saturday what I was actually doing. See, I saw eating as equals freedom, but I also saw any restriction on food as the jailer. So my higher self wants my mindset, wants my business, wants my weight, wants my everything to be in perfect harmony and awesome, right? A model of excellence. I want a model of excellence in my relationship with my kids, in my relationship with my wife, in my relationship with my family, and my business, with my income, with my assets, with investments, in myself, with my spirituality, with my mindset, with my weight, with my shape, with my strength. I want it all to be model of excellence. Okay. But what I was doing is my higher self wanted more for me, you know, weight wise, wanted six pack abs and all these different things. And I was seeing that higher self as my jailer, and my rebel nature, because of my past, kept rebelling against it. So not only was eating equals freedom, but restrictions were my jailer, and I fight against that because I love freedom. And so I realized I was battling myself, and that isn't helpful. And you'll always lose that battle. You'll always lose in one way or another. You'll lose. So if you're the type that picks on yourself every day, if you have mom guilt, you know, 8 out of 7 days a week, if you feel bad about something you didn't do, did do, you know, whatever, you're battling yourself. And you'll always lose that battle in some way, either through emotional breakthrough or breakdown, I should say, or relationship loss, or this whole thing. So I had to shift. So restriction, that's not my jailer. Overeating is my jailer, because that was the actual addiction. So the overeating, the bad food, the that, this and that. And so since that realization, since Saturday, It just so happens that it fell on an interesting, that I had this realization at an interesting time, because Saturday night we were at Capitol Grill with Every Temptation on the Planet, and someone else was paying, so that's nice too. Sunday night I was at Trulux, which if you know Naples, Florida, that's an amazing, amazing place. And someone was paying for that too, so you know that's nice, right? And then whatever. So for the past 4 days, I haven't eaten one thing that I didn't on purpose want to eat. And that's a very big deal. I mean, maybe you're on here and you've got six pack abs and you're good to go. But for me, that was a very big deal. But if you're not where you want to be, there's a very good chance that you've been battling your higher self. Stop battling your higher self and start seeing the bad thing. That's the jailer. Not your restriction, not yourself, not your push, not your agenda, not your intention, not your desires. See the thing that's actually not good for you, right? Which is not being consistent or whatever that is for you. Start seeing that. Okay. Question: Are you still doing an exercise before you go to bed each night? Anyone still doing it? Yep. Great. So important. I do it every night. I do it every night. So important. And I mean, it's free, right? You don't have to swipe the card, right, to do it. But it's free. It's fairly quick. But just see yourself. Create that vision of who you want to be and see it as if it's reality. Feel that emotion. And by the way, I think I talked about this last week, but I've always had this. To me, a lot of trainers, when they talk about subconscious, it's like this nebulous thing. Like, what is the subconscious actually? And you know, Neville Goddard talks about it, but even him, I saw it as kind of nebulous. And I feel like I've cracked this code. I feel like I've cracked this code. I now see the subconscious as your heart, because your heart and the subconscious have so many things in common. They have, they operate by emotion, not by affirmation, not by language. They operate by emotion. They are often in conflict with your mind. Okay, your mind operates with language. Your mind doesn't really operate with emotion. That's your heart kicking in, okay? And we know that whatever emotion we hold, we get more of, and we know whatever emotion we hold is telling the subconscious what we want more of. So there's nothing I could find that didn't match exactly with the heart. And so this is why, you know, when you say something like, I am abundant, or I am wealthy, right? That works for your mind, which is the Newtonian, which is the mule, right? That's the mule, right? Your mind is the mule. It's also, you know, the demons too, but it's the mule. It's the worker, right? It's the worker bee. But your heart and the subconscious is the magician. And that operates only by emotion. So your heart, subconscious, they don't hear that affirmation of I'm wealthy, but they could feel you stepping on that yacht, you inviting your friends over to join you on your amazing yacht, you out there on that yacht in the ocean, smelling the salty air, right? It can feel that. It can feel those emotions. It can feel the emotion of you in your new house. As people who doubted you come in and they look around and they're like, oh my God, this is amazing, right? So they don't hear your cries for, I have an amazing $1 million house, or, you know, if you're in Naples, I guess a $10 million house. The heart, subconscious, but they can feel you conjuring up the images of people giving you compliments, of you feeling good being there, nice and safe and awesome, and on the cover of a magazine. How would you feel when your mom sees that? It can feel that. And so that's what you should be doing before bed. And so in the absence of progress, Because I know it's very simple to say, yeah, I've been doing it, but, right? Keep going. There are weeks where I don't have a meditation breakthrough. There are weeks when I didn't get a customer or recruit. Quitting doesn't speed anything up. So don't quit. Don't quit. Okay. All right. So here we go. We haven't even started yet. How's the pre-show? Is the pre-show okay? So tonight's duplication and team building. I actually have two cool things for you. I'll tell you this one though. Thursday night, which I realize is St. Patty's Day, right? So clearly I'm not going out partying on St. Patty's Day, but I have my good friend Marley Jacks. Marley Jacks is going to be on with us, and I've been working with her team and started a YouTube channel from scratch less than a year ago. This isn't a ton, right? But it makes over $500 a month just from views, which is, you know, just people advertising on the videos. But she's going to dive into how to use YouTube to recruit. And this is a really powerful way because most people in your company aren't going to do this. And, you know, when I was doing some of the things that she'll talk about, I was recruiting consistently every single month from YouTube. And so if you'd like to register for that, you can. HigdonGroup.com/YouTube. Free to attend, and she's a rock star. She's really, really good at what she does. She consulted Damon John. She consulted a lot of very, very successful business gurus and phenoms. So there you go. All right. So tonight we're diving in. First, I'm going to talk about how I blew it at team building and duplication. Then we're going to dive into the most important element, culture, which is so misunderstood. It's so misunderstood. Even people who've heard me talk about culture still misunderstand it. And it's interesting, you know, tonight is Larry Thompson, or today is Larry Thompson's birthday. And so happy birthday to Larry. Larry got started in network marketing over 50 years ago at the same night, same hotel meeting that Jim Rohn started in network marketing. And Jim Rohn even said that there's no one that knows more about network marketing than Larry. And so I learned a lot from Larry. Then Larry joined our mastermind a few years ago. So I got to, you know, help him with, you know, some of his, you know, brand and marketing and that kind of stuff. So it was really cool. But he is, I think he's without a doubt the trainer that knows the most about culture. And I like to think that I've absorbed what he knows around culture, and I teach it in my own little way. But it's so misunderstood, but my goal is to help you better understand it tonight. I'm gonna talk about lead source versus what you do with leads in regards to duplication. This is a big issue that people kind of run into. Then we're gonna talk about work ethic and duplication, personal time in your team, and then the best way to run contests that very, very few people do. And the leaders that I've worked with over the years, I have at least three very big leaders. Like they came to me and they were already humongous leaders. When they ran the contest the way that I suggested, they had their biggest month in their entire career. And so I know that three may not sound like a lot, but these are people that were already very big. And so that was, you know, quite unique over a 20-year career. And I show them something that gives them the biggest month they've ever had. And so we'll dive into that. Now, how I used to show up. So I remember getting on conference calls and, you know, I would say, hey, if you're not prospecting 10 people a day, what's wrong with you? Right? I just thought that, you know, being aggressive and pumping people up, that was what I needed to do. I had this very high-producing local rep, and he was amazing. His name was John. And John would, I mean, he was just incredible. He would just say, and this was back when, you know, when I was doing, you know, local, you know, meetings and stuff, he'd say, Ray, man, you know, where are you at this week? And he would get people there, they'd sign up. He'd get people there, they'd sign up. He'd get people there, they'd sign up. And he had seen me present like umpteen different times. And I had heard this kind of story from others. So I thought, you know what? I'm just going to have him run the presentation. Okay. And I'm a spring it on him. That's what I'll do. And so this guy, I think in his first month, had recruited 25 people. And that's 25 people at a minimum $500 buy-in, because that was the buy-in of that company. So that's pretty good. That's pretty good. 25 at $500 or higher, because we had a $1,000 option. And so I'm like, hey, man, I can't show up for the presentation later today. Why don't you run it? I've done a whole bunch of, oh, I don't want to run it. You know what? You got this, brother. You got this. I believe in you. You can make it happen. You know, any questions? That was the last time I talked to him. He quit. He never showed up again. He completely disappeared. And so who knows? Who knows how awesome he would have done had I not tried to push him, which is what so many leaders do. That's they're a one-trick pony, and it's push, okay? So anyway, the bragging presenter. I knew especially my first network marketing company, I thought that, you know, I had to impress people. So I would say, hey there, I've been in real estate and I've made a lot of money in real estate and da 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 da. And so a very small percentage of people would join at my presentations, very small. When I got away from that by understanding culture and duplication, my closing rate went through the roof. I mean, it just went, you know, more than 10 times what I was closing before. I used to be the guy that would spend unlimited time on the phone with a rep guy. Okay, with a rep guy. I don't know why it says that. With a rep. Oh, I was the spend unlimited time on the phone with a rep guy, meaning me. And so I'll give you two quick stories here. I'm going to turn off the screen. All right, so example one is I would... When I lost a lot of weight, back to weight, right? So I was 255 pounds and I dropped way down to, I think, like 200. And at the time I was working for Collier County, and this there was a young kid there, and he was, you know, he carried some weight for sure. And he was like, dude, how'd you do it, man? You know, like, what'd you do? And I'm just, you know, I just have my heart. My heart is to help others. That's what gives me significance. It makes me feel good. I don't do it selflessly. I do it selfishly because it makes me feel good, right? So that's for me. So me even helping you, that's for me. You happen to get benefit, but I feel good doing it. And so I'm like, oh yeah, man. So I start telling him how, you know, I park farther away. I take the stairs. I don't eat past, you know, whatever it was, 7, I don't know, what workouts I was doing. And I spend like the next 40 minutes with him, just detailing everything out and everything. And he's, oh my God, thank you. That's awesome, man. I really want to lose some weight. I'm like, no problem, brother. You got it, man. And so I go back to my desk and I think of one last thing. Oh, and so I go back over to his cubicle. We're in the same room, just separated by cubicles, and he's eating Fritos. He's looking at his screen, he's just eating Fritos, yum, 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 yum. And I'm like, oh yeah, and by the way, what are you eating? Oh, Fritos, bro. I'm like, huh. So I didn't tell him that last tip, and I'm like, lesson learned. Okay, great. I spent all that time. So scenario two. It took me a couple times to learn this. Scenario two, I'm in network marketing and a rep reaches out to me. He goes, hey man, I used to be in construction, dude. And I just don't know how to approach, you know, who I used to work with. You know, they're blue collar guys. And I'm like, yeah, man, absolutely. I'm more than happy. So I spent, you know, the next 45 minutes, hour on the phone with them. Hang up. Next week, he calls me again. He goes, hey, bro, hey, I got a quick question for you, man. What would you do to talk to? And he gave me some other scenario. And I said, well, what happened with your construction workers? He goes, I just don't think they'd be interested. I'm like, ah, okay. So both scenarios, I exerted energy, time for absolutely no reason. And so if you scale that out, If you're that person that answers every phone call and spends however long it takes, that's a problem. And we're going to help you with that tonight. Okay. Because I am not saying don't help people. That'd be odd. That'd be a strange platform to stand on. But I am saying be smarter with your time and be more scalable, be more duplicatable. And we'll talk about that. Okay. Also, I was the lifeguard. What's the lifeguard? Okay. The lifeguard is the person that recruits a few people and then climbs up in the lifeguard chair and says, "All right, guys, go ahead, go and swim." Why aren't they swimming? I told them to swim. All right, maybe I got to teach them more. So the lifeguard is the person that recruits a few people, then climbs up in their chair. "All right, go ahead. You go recruit now." And that's rarely how it works. And I don't care if you just recruited 10 people, 20 people, 50 people, 100 people. Rarely how it works. Okay? Rarely. You have to keep going. You have to keep going. And we'll bring that up. So don't do any of that. So what is your actual job? You ready for this? I don't think you are. I do not think you are. To do the work you wish your people were doing with zero addiction to any of them actually doing that work. You keep showing up how you wish they would, and you will find the right people. It may not be the first month. It may not be your first month. It may not be their first month. It may not be your first year. It may not be their first year. See, we went away. Based, I realized something. When 15 of you entered the contest last week, I realized, man, I have not been nearly as tough with them as I need to be. And so I'm going to read this again. To do the work you wish your people were doing with zero, does that mean a little bit? Or does it mean zero? It means zero addiction to any. Does that mean a few? Any of them actually doing it. You keep showing up how you wish they would, and you will find the right people. So that means your job is to get customers and recruit people. That's your job, to keep doing that over and over and over and over and over and over. Now, this whole presentation is about team building, duplication. So you're going to hear, don't worry, we don't stop here, right? But I'm going to share with you some other things here. But if you made this job one is for me to get new blood into the organization, because people are going to do what I'm doing, not what I wish them to do. And I'm going to attract who I am, not what I want. So who am I? I'm a recruiter. I'm a business builder. I'm a customer getter. You be that, you're going to increase significantly you attracting that type of person as well. But as long as you do a little bit of work and then you look at what they're not doing and get frustrated and sad face and angry, then that's what you get more of. Where was your emotion? Your emotion was in the what they're not doing. So that's what you'll get more of. There we go. So has it been helpful already? Are you mad at me yet? Good. Nice. Yeah. Shirley says it is. All right. I'll take it. Thank you, Shirley. I love it. Some are saying ouch. Good. 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 With ouch, there's awareness. Okay. All right. So what is culture? Culture is the... So many people, here's what I've heard from so many leaders, and I'm not going to name names, I'm going to be mad at me, but so many leaders have told me, I have great culture, I just really struggle with retention. That doesn't make sense. That's like saying, I have an incredible immune system, I just keep getting sick. Doesn't make sense. One is a problem for the other. A retention issue is a culture issue. always. There is no such thing as a retention issue not being a culture issue. Okay, so we have to define culture. Culture is the making of people to feel good regardless of their level of desire or level of result. And, you know, making is actually too strong of a word here. The allowing of people to feel good regardless of their level of desire or level of result. Because you can't make anyone feel anything, right? The allowing of people to feel good regardless of the level of desire or level of result. Could I join your team, not produce in month one, month two, month three, month four, month five, month six, month seven, month 13, month 17, year four, year five? Could I join your team, not produce, and still feel welcome? Or would I, by any length of time, feel bad that I wasn't doing enough? Because network marketing is the most volunteer relationship on planet Earth. It's not easy to go through a divorce. It's not easy to fire your parents or fire your kids. It's not easy to leave a job most of the time. It's real easy to quit a network marketing team. Real easy. And people that they can't figure out how to use their microwave, they can't figure out how to order anything, they find that cancel button. And even though your company puts in all these loops, right? Like you have to fax a barcode to a warehouse and then, you know, double copy that and scan it to another warehouse. And you have to provide, you know, proof of your driver's license. And you have to somehow, you know, have that 4D sent to space, right? I know that companies make all these hoops that you have to jump through. Like, have you ever tried canceling an LA Fitness membership? Yeah. You ever tried canceling ADT security systems? I realize that network marketing companies sometimes put all these hoops and all these barriers and all this barbed wire and all these things. But the person wants to quit your team, they'll figure all that out. All of a sudden, they become a tech genius where they couldn't figure out anything. The whole time that you were trying to help them, they couldn't figure out anything. What do you mean, lift, click, right? They have no idea what the hell's going on. They will navigate the hills and valleys, the peaks, the crannies, the craters, right? And they'll find that cancel button. They'll fax this. They'll voice record this. They'll show the driver's license. They'll get out of your team because you're the most volunteer relationship that they have in their entire life. And if you make them feel bad, if you make them feel like a disappointment, they got plenty of that from their parents, they're out. They ain't going to pay for it. First of all, does that make sense? Does that make sense? Okay. And so culture, good culture, makes it okay. I had people, in fact, I'm going to use one testimonial a little bit later tonight. I had people in my team for years before they produce anything. And they felt welcome. They didn't feel excluded. I didn't make them feel like a disappointment. And I just wasn't addicted to them doing the work. I wanted them to allow them to feel good regardless of their level of desire, level of result. Okay. And so this comes down to the core teaching that I got from Larry Thompson, 80, 15, and 5. And I'm going to say this 11 times, and it's going to take you 9 times to get the distinction, okay? 80, 15, and 5 is level of desire, not result, okay? So that's one. I'm going to make a little note. You think I'm joking here, but I'm telling you, you're going to mistranslate it the first 9 times, okay? So it's the level of desire, not level of result. Okay. That's 2 times. 80% of your team, whether you walk on water, whether you heal the sick, whether you have the gift of flight, whether you are NLP certified and you have a PhD in psychology, 80% of your organization has a desire level of $0 to $500 a month. With that being said, how many of you would say you're in that 80%? You guys scared? You guys scared to answer? Only a few of you. Okay. The answer is none of you. None of you are 80%ers. Third time. It's level of desire, not level of result. So all you heard was zero to 500 bucks, and you said, that's what I'm making. Is that your desire? Your desire is only to make? So let me ask it like this. Who has a desire to only make up to 500 bucks a month? Anybody? Yeah. No. Zero of you. Why? Why can I say that with conviction? Because you wouldn't be on here. The person that wants to make zero to 500 bucks a month, they're not buying trainings. They're not getting coaching. They're just kind of, hey, if I make it, I make it. That's the majority of your team. The majority of your team is not like you. Now, what exactly do I classify as desire? Desire, the indication of desire is the attempts at personal production. So I've met $1 million a year, multi-million dollar a year, 80%ers. Huh? Yeah. I'll give you a good example. So there's a guy, Todd, that I don't know how long it's been, 5 years, 6 years, something like that. He had built a multi six-figure business in his network marketing company, just hustling, grinding, traveling all over the world, just building. He made it happen. And his kids were getting older, and they got to like their teenage years. And he said, you know what? I want to just focus on them for a few years. So he went from someone with high levels of desire to someone with low level of desire to grow that business. And so his personal production attempts plummeted. Now his income didn't plummet. I think he had multi six-figure business for many years. Well, he checked out. He came to one of our events, he got fired up, he got reignited, he came back in and started building again. So he moved back in the direction of a higher level of desire. So I haven't been counting, but I'm probably at 5 or 6 right now. And so the big issue here, and I just had to teach one of my close clients this again, is they said, we gotta. Just a bunch of 80%ers. Should I create a group for just the 5%ers? And I'll get to that here in a second. And I said, one, no. And two, how do you know they're a 5%er? He said, oh, well, they're the ones making money. Incorrect. It is level of desire, not level of result. Believe me, because every company executive tells me this, every one of them I've ever spoken for, they complain. And I try to help them, right? But they complain that they have a bunch of people making, it depends on the company, but a bunch of people making $20,000 to $50,000 a month or more that just don't do anything anymore. They don't personally produce. But they bring an opinion, but they don't personally produce. And I said, well, they did the work. The only mistake you're making is in being upset with them for not doing the work, but also taking their opinion. the person that isn't in the field, the person that isn't in, isn't on the court, they shouldn't have an opinion. All right, so 80% of your team, regardless if you walk on water, regardless if you throw beer cans at them, 80% have a desire of $0 to $500 a month. So their attempts at personal production will be anywhere from zero to a little bit, hobby-ish. 15% of your team will have a desire level of $2,000 to $3,000 a month. If they get to $2,000 to $3,000 a month, they can go one of two ways. They can go like, you know what? I want more of this. This feels nice. Or they can say, huh, made it. And then now their desire level of 80%. Making $2,000 to $3,000 a month. Because their attempts at personal production will decrease. 5% of any organization has a desire level to make $25,000 or more a month. 5%. And the big problem, massive problem here, is it's the 5%ers that are every trainer on your stage, that are every, that's who's teaching. And every 5%er I have ever met without this training, that either they got from me or Larry, because I don't know anyone else that teaches culture in this exact way, all of them are trying to get the other 95% to be them, which is very frustrating for the 95%. It's belittling for the 95%. It makes them feel like disappointments for the 95%. And maybe you think that doesn't matter. Maybe you only need high go-getters. Well, keep in mind, 95% is also 95% of your volume. Because even the super recruiter recruits people that are 80%ers. Even the high go-getter recruits people that, aren't super motivated. And so 80% is 80% of your actual volume, 80% of what you get compensated on. And so it's not bad to be a desire level of 5%. Can you be a desire level of 5%, a 5%er, and not be making anything in your company? Yeah. Because if you're massively investing your time and effort into your personal production, and you have a very clear goal of, I want to get to the top, I want to make over $25,000 a month, then you're a 5%er. Your results haven't caught up, but you're a 5%er. You're hungry. I couldn't overcoach you, because you're going to take it, all right, boss, and you're going to go run with it. Like I have a new client that I'm helping him. It's a little bit different than my normal client, but I'm helping him with he's building his real estate empire, and he's building a real estate investing course for beginners and things like that. And so, he had a VIP day with me, and I told him exactly what to do. Guess what he's doing? So a 5%er, you could give bad instructions to, and they'll still make it work because they're that hungry. Okay. So the big mistake here is taking 80, 15, and 5 and thinking that has to do with current results. It does not. It has to do with levels of desire, which can vary. Some people change. Some people get to a point, their desire drops. Some people get to a point, their desire increases. So it's a moving thing. And so this is the key, especially if you want to get into seven figures and above, and you want to get there as quickly and easily as humanly possible. This is a key thing. Now, can you have terrible culture and make a lot of money? Yes, you can. I've seen it. It's extremely rare to have terrible culture and you to lead a team and be making over $250,000 a year. Extremely rare, really rare. Very common for the $80,000 a year person, even the $120,000 a year person, very common for them not to have the greatest culture. If they fix their culture, their income would double. And I've seen it over and over and over and over. When we were running our masterminds, we would have, up to 90 people in these masterminds, and we would see leaders double their income. leaders that were that joined us, quite a few years ago, John and Nadia Melton, they still to this day, I'm very grateful for this, but they'll get on stage and say, hey, when we came to Ray, we were making six figures a year and he helped us get to six figures a month. They say that, right? And I would always say this if they were cool saying that. When you have better culture, everything becomes easier. It just does. And so I want you, the best analogy, and I've come up with all kinds of different analogies and I've tested these over the years. The best analogy is still the gym owner. Okay. So the gym owner, if you go into the gym and you got your Beats by Dre on, your big headband, you got your, wristbands and your Air Jordans, and you go in there and go on the treadmill at, 2 miles per hour. You do it for 4 minutes. You wipe your brow. You take a picture for Instagram. And then you go get your 2,200 calorie peanut butter banana chocolate shake and you walk out the door. What does the gym owner say to you? Does the gym owner say, hey, seriously? Get over there and do some deadlifts, buddy. I didn't see you hit the crunches. You're not gaining any muscle. You're not losing any fat. Get back in there, man. Don't quit that early. No, the gym owner will literally never say that to you, ever. Why? Because they like your membership. I get those confused sometimes. The gym owner, and by the way, does that mean the gym owner doesn't care? I care more than the gym owner. I've heard leaders say this line, I want it more for them than they want. Do you realize what that actually is saying? It's saying they're disappointments to you. No one wants to be a disappointment in the most volunteer relationship they have in their entire life. So if you want it more for them than they want it, then you are creating a toxic culture that it's going to push people out too early before they could possibly catch their stride. The gym owner. Now, what if I go to the gym owner and say, hey, man, I've been coming here for a couple of years. I've been on the treadmill for 4 minutes and I get my shake and everything. And, I really want to step it up. What will the gym owner do? The gym owner will point, guide, and direct and say, well, we got spin class. We got racquetball. We got CrossFit. You got to, flip tires and rip phone books and stuff. We got a personal trainer if you want a personal trainer. The gym owner, based on you raising your hand, will point, guide, and direct you to that next level. What does that look like? That's good leadership in network marketing. Gym owner gets paid regardless of the results of the people that come in. You're getting paid off the volume of the people that come in regardless of their results. And guess what? And I know my 5%ers are psycho right now, and they're thinking, but you don't think like the 80%er if you're on here. You just don't. And so you can't get in their heads. There are people that I've met that have been in network marketing for 25 years, have never made much money at all, but love it. Who's to take that away? Wipe that smile off your face, boy, right? You're not making enough money to smile. What? Yay, you're happy, way to go. Allowing them to feel good regardless of their level of desire, level of result, okay? And I've seen people that are in network marketing that 2 years in, they haven't done anything, then they catch a spark. And I believe the longer you keep them around the campfire, the more likely they'll catch a spark. But just don't be addicted to that spark. Don't be addicted to them doing the work or not. Okay. Helpful. I'm going to give you another example here. Okay. All right. So one of the questions that I knew I would get is, well, how do we not make them feel like a disappointment? You make it okay. So if I was starting a team training, when I understood this and I started a team training, I would use this little word. It's a very small word, but very powerful. If. Hey, guys, tonight we're doing a team training. And by the way, if you're on here and you're a customer of ours and building a business isn't really your focus, totally cool. We appreciate you. Thank you so very much. You're awesome. You're amazing. Now, this next part, that's for the people that want to build a business. So if that's you, stick around. And if not, cool, you can stick around if you want. But just know that we love you either way. Isn't that simple? If this wasn't simple, I can't teach it. I can't teach it. Why would I teach you something complex? This isn't complex. Now, it may be difficult for you to get out of your mindset of everyone must want to be a millionaire. I must get everyone to work. Ray, only 92% of my team are doing things. I'll say, damn, that's pretty amazing. Don't get used to that. How do I get 100%? Cracking me up over here. It's like saying, like just think about like parenting. So take your team and say that's your kids. Ray, I have 1,100 kids. How do I get all of them to want to be a doctor? How do I get all of them to want to be million-dollar CEOs? I'd say, you can't. And attempting to do so is going to make them feel pretty bad. So I want you to see their level of desire and point them in the right direction. Well, this one wants to be a journalist. Why don't you let them be a journalist and maybe, you know, see what else anyone else wants to be. Okay. And so think Jim or not sales manager. Okay. Now, what if you have an uncle, Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos is your uncle. Congratulations. The founder of Amazon. And he's, moving his location, and he has a warehouse that's been fully paid for. And because of tax reasons or something, he doesn't want to, it's a call center, and he doesn't want to, sell it and make a capital gain or anything. And so he just goes to you, his favorite niece or nephew, and says, hey, I got this call center. It's got all these computers. It's got all these phones. It's got all these desks and, cubicles and everything. And, it'll house about, 10,000 people. You can use it if you want. If you want, you can use it, no cost. Okay, got it. So let's say that you had your network marketing team in there. How stringent would you be on each person? If you're getting the building for free, if you're getting the computers for free, if you're getting the phone services for free, and even Uncle Jeff is covering the maintenance of the building, he's covered janitorial. Would you go around and be like, Tracy, how come you're not prospecting more people? Step it up. How hardcore would you be per person to each person in their cubicles? I'm just curious. Okay. Would you be hardcore? Would you be rough on them? Would you really be? So not hardcore at all is most likely the reaction here, right? I'm not paying anything, so, whatever. Let me change it up for you. So let's say that they're paying you. You can have 10,000 people in there. Let's say that they're paying you $1 a desk a month. So every month they actually pay you. Now, you get a sales override. So if the more they sell, the more you make. But whether they sell anything at all, they pay you $1 a month to be there. Is it even less likely for you to be hardcore on them? Right? And let me tell you why I give you this example. So I coached an insurance team, a small insurance team, a few years back. And they brought me there was like, I don't know, maybe 10 of them. I'm making the math simple here, but there was like 10 of them. They're in this commercial space. I'm going to guess maybe it was $5,000 a month. Who knows, right? With arrows and emissions, with insurance, with janitorial, with maintenance, with whatever, right? Taxes, right? So let's say there's 10 people, $5,000 a month. And so, they brought me their scripts. I tweaked their scripts. They increased revenue by $40,000 a week. These 10 people, 40,000 a week. But take that out of it. If you have an office and you have 10 desks and it costs you 5,000 a month, how much must each person produce for you before you have to get rid of them? Right? 500 a month, right? You want more than 500 a month. So you at least, keep some money, right? Okay. In this scenario, there is no cost. You may see this as an amazing scenario, but yours is actually better because you don't have a limit of 10,000 and you probably get paid more than a dollar a month from everyone in your organization. And the only overhead is how you use your time, because you're not paying per person. One of our clients has 750,000 people in his organization. Is this helping? Does this give you a little bit different feeling here of how great you actually have it? You know, I remember, you know, one of my buddies, his name's Trey Llewellyn. Trey Llewellyn is just a master marketer. I mean, he's just unbelievable, incredible entrepreneur. And he invented the term tactical flashlight. And at one point in time, he was selling 500,000 flashlights a day on the internet. And he had to have some call centers, man. And those call centers weren't from Uncle Jeff. He had to pay some real money with real people and very different scenario. You literally could have 500,000 people in your organization and you get compensated in some way, shape, or form. Maybe it's a quarter. Maybe it's a dollar. Maybe it's $5. Maybe it's 50 cents. You get compensated from every single person, right? And I know that some have seven generations or three generations or whatever, but it's not costing you anything for this workforce, right? When we introduce cost, that's when you have to be stringent. But network marketers by default are stringent from the get-go. They're like, hey, Tony isn't doing anything. How do I get Tony to do something? He's not doing anything, right? Is that harming you in some way? No, but I'm not gaining anything. Got it. Well, the pressure you're about to apply on Tony is going to make him quit. And then you won't ever earn anything off him, even though he would have ordered his product or service for many years. Does that make sense? Do you get it? Does that make sense? I hope it does. Okay. All right. Let's move forward. Okay. Now, one thing that I've heard over the years is sometimes people take duplication to an insane amount and like everything must be duplicated, right? And so this level of hard-headedness, I can give you a terrible example, but you know what? I feel good sharing this because more people need to know it. So back in the 70s, there was a political group that went into Cambodia, overthrew the government, and their whole message was equality. This was, I think, 74 maybe. And so they're like, everything equality. There are too many people making money way more than the average person. We want equality. Okay. And this is historical. I'm not saying whatever, right? They went into, I may pronounce this wrong, Phnom Penh, I think, and they moved. And so, first of all, how do you create equality? Okay. Well, do we make everyone millionaires? Well, that's not possible. So if we want equality, we got to bring everyone down. True equality. And so this was their mission, through equality. Okay. And so they go into the city and any doctor they killed, any actor or actress they killed, any musician they killed, any translator they killed, anyone, this is true. There's a great documentary. It's very sad, but more people need to know this stuff. There's a documentary on it called The Missing Picture, and it's on Amazon. I don't know if it's still there, but anyone that wore glasses, they killed, because clearly they're too smart. That was their thinking, right? So if you had massive skill, if you had a college degree, if you had glasses, killed you. And oh, by the way, it wouldn't be equal if some people are in a city and some people are out in the rice fields, right? That wouldn't be equal. So what they do? They move 2 million people, or no, actually more than that. I don't know the exact number, but they move millions of people from Pyongyang, I may be saying that wrong, please forgive me, to the fields, the rice fields. Gave them a hoe or a spade, gave them a shovel. That's equality, right? No one has more skills. No one has any money. We're just going to work them. Work, work, work. And so that's what that level of thinking is what created the Cambodian killing fields, where 2 million people died being worked to death, being starved. They were given a little this much rice each day. And so when you have this high level of hard-headedness, and I know this is quite a leap from duplication to the Cambodian killing fields, I know, but it's the same kind of thinking. It's the hard-headed thinking that everyone must be this, everything must be this way, okay? And so your lead sources need to be duplicatable, okay? The documentary is called The Missing Picture. It'll break your heart. It will absolutely break your heart, but it's called The Missing Picture. But more people need to know about it. People don't know about Pol Pot. They don't know anything about it. Over there they do. You go visit, I haven't visited Cambodia, but my father-in-law has, and he said that's all they talk about, as they should, as a warning to let's not ever do that kind of thing again. And so some people are so hardcore when it comes to duplication that they kind of lose the forest for the trees kind of thing. Okay. So this is the deal. Where you get leads is not what's important, but what you do with the leads is. Okay, let me give you my examples here. So if you recruit a doctor, do they have an advantage? Definitely, no question. An authority figure, people look up to them, people literally come to them and pay them per hour for their advice on their problems. Definitely an advantage. And so authors, influencers, et cetera, they all have advantages, right? They have more relationships with more people that look up to them. So the problem is, if the doctors, the authors, the influencers, the, you know, whoever has special, you know, connections, leads or whatever, if they recruit people, and I do mean recruit, okay, customers is a little bit different. A doctor can go get a bunch of customers, but his problem will be if any of them want to build a business. That's the duplication factor. Okay. And so you can have people that come in, celebrities, and get a whole bunch of recruits, and it all fall to pieces and no one, you know, make any money because they didn't do it in a duplicatable way. If you rely on your personality, your charisma, your following. And so if you're a and I had this happen to me, and I had people say, hey, man, I've been following you for years. I want to join your team. Now, if I accepted them joining and said, sure, man, $500, man, just give me your credit card. I'll get you in. Then I am grossly not abiding by this rule. So instead, not that I had a ton of these, but I had some that would come to me and say, hey, man, I love what you do. I want to join your team. I don't even know the name of the company. I did have people say that. That's kind of neat. But I would actually stop them and say, hey, man, thank you. I really appreciate that. Listen, I want you to watch this video first. Let's make sure it's a fit for you. Because I want them to draw the conclusion that, oh, this is how you recruit. It's not that I have to wait for people to tell me they want to join me. It's I actually have to get them to watch a video. So what you do with the prospects, once the lead has been generated, that's what's so important. Is it's important for you to send them through a process that anyone else can follow that doesn't require them to be a doctor or an author or an influencer, et cetera. So first, does that make sense? Do you understand the distinction? So if you, you know, there are a lot of celebrities in network marketing. I mean, Shaq and I'm not thinking of any others, but there's a bunch of celebrities over the years that have been in network marketing. So you wouldn't want to make them equal. and say, don't use your celebrity status. That would be dumb. But what you should do is whoever they're wanting to introduce the business to is have them go through the same process that they would tell their people, you know, a video or a presentation or Zoom or whatever, whatever that process is. So the process is what's so important. Where we get the leads, right? Whether it's cold, you know, prospecting, whether it's, you know, someone's a celebrity, right? Someone's an author, someone's a right? Where you generate the leads, that's not what has to be duplicatable, or we would be very limiting, right? Kind of like the Cambodia situation. We'd be very limiting it. Everything has to be duplicatable and the same. We'd be very limiting. We literally couldn't bring in musicians, authors, doctors, et cetera, because that wouldn't fit our criteria. And so that's not what's important, what the process you put them through. So I don't want to, you know, beat this over and over, but hopefully you get it. So know that the majority of your team will not be influencers and won't have the patience or desire to learn marketing, which is why you should never bash or rule out cold prospecting. This is such an important point, right? So, you know, you don't want to bash any way for anyone to get leads to prospect ever. You don't want to bash that. You just want to make sure you help them with the process of whatever process they're doing is duplicatable. Okay. So let's talk about work ethic. And, you know, work ethic is a lot of people, same with lead sources. A lot of people say, well, Ray, I want to prospect 100 people a day, but that's just not very duplicatable. Okay. So there's two types of work ethic. Your personal work ethic and your team work ethic. Team work ethic, you should be very concerned with. And we'll get to that. I think that might be the next slide. But team work ethic, be very concerned with. And I'll that's one that people aren't concerned with, interestingly enough. And so I'll come back to that. But your personal work ethic, it's not how hard you work. That doesn't have to be duplicated. So I would never limit you. I would never say, oh, don't prospect 100 people because, you know, most people are only going to do 10. So let's drop it down to 10. No. First of all, you don't have to brag to your team how many you're prospecting. That doesn't have to be a factor, right? Unless you want to share, but you don't have to. But it's not, it's are you doing things in a way that others can do them? Okay. And so are you, you know, maybe you do 1,000 sit-ups a day. Okay. If you went to your team and called them and told them that they were idiots if they didn't do 1,000 sit-ups a day, then that would be incorrect. That would not be the right approach. Okay. But if you went to them and said, hey guys, you know, here's how to do a sit-up. And, you know, I think most of you are able to, you know, do that sit-up. I think all of you and, you know, however many you do is kind of based on your level of desire. If you want six-pack abs, you may want to do a whole bunch like I do. If you're just trying to get that dad bod, just do a few. Okay. So the example is whatever you can do as much of it as you want. Just, I would suggest against doing it in a way that others can't duplicate that way. Okay. And I will hang around. I'll take a couple of questions on this topic. Helpful so far? I told you this is a deep one. This is a deep one. Yeah, Leah. So she said Leah, who is an extremely successful short video player, she says my team refuses to make reels. Yeah, and you know all you can do is just share. Hey, I did this reel. Here's what happened. You know, do them if you want, but you don't have to. Like that's the way to do this. That's the way to handle it. Okay. All right. This is the work ethic I'm most concerned about that most people aren't concerned about because guilt. Guilt is the crusher of this because most people feel guilty that people in their team aren't making money. And they don't even know their level of desire. So they don't know if they feel bad, but they just feel guilty because they're not making money, right? They don't know if they even want to make money, but they feel bad because they're not making money. So one thing that is energetically true is guilt always has to be punished. When you carry guilt, you have to be punished. You have to be. Because that is a very specific emotion that has to get its fulfilling. It has to get its verifying. So when you hold that guilt, you're going to find more people accuse you of being selfish. You're going to find more people accuse you of how you're not the greatest leader because you don't care enough, right? So if you want that, then just carry guilt and feel bad. Feel really bad, okay? And oh, by the way, when you carry guilt as a leader, people can sense that and they don't want that. Your guilt is actually energetically sabotaging them. Whatever you do for your team, including carrying guilt, they think they will have to do. So if you're, and this is direct contrast to corporate world. In the corporate world, what do you got to do to get ahead? You got to be the first one there, right? You got to be the last one to leave. Remember when those who watched Seinfeld, you know, when George Costanza, his car broke down, and so he left it in the parking lot, and his boss would see it and be like, dang, Costanza's, he beats me to work every day. Dang, Costanza's still working. And he like got him a promotion. He like promoted him because he thought he was working all the time. So in the corporate world, we wear our work ethic on our sleeve. Look, hey, boss, I'll come in this weekend. I worked really hard. I came in early. I was last one to leave. Right. So in the corporate world, it's common for you to share your work ethic on your sleeve. Look how hard I'm working. Because you want that promotion. There's only so much. There's only one corner office. I got to work so I can get it. Okay. When you do that in network marketing, when you do every training, when you do every presentation, when you answer every call, no matter what time it is, right? When you carry guilt, right? Oh, I want it more for you than you wanted, right? You're sending off all these things that people don't want to do. So you're thinking that you're helping them, you're actually sabotaging them. Whatever you do for your team, they think they will have to do. So some will say, oof, I don't ever want to be as stressed as Carrie. No thanks. Man, you see Johnny? He looks so stressed out. I ain't going to become a diamond. Because they associate your level with that level of stress, guilt, unhappiness, workaholicism. They don't want that. They want the easy life, man. They want to feel good. They want to be happy. They want, you know, maybe make some money, but at the end of the day, they want to feel good. They don't want to feel bad. And that's what they associate with the workaholic. That's what they associate with the person that does everything, even if you're doing it for them. Okay. And so the more time you spend with each rep, more personal time you spend with each rep, the more time they think they'll have to spend with their reps to be a good leader. And so you want to think duplication. Is me spending 2 hours with a rep, one, would they be able to do that with their rep? And two, would they want to do that? The answer is no, they would not. And no, they do not. Okay. And so a couple of things here. Teach to teach. This is such a big deal. Teach to teach. So let me give you the earliest example that could possibly exist with you and your potential rep is, let's say you're talking to someone that wants to build a business and you say, you know, hey, I got this great video that does a better job than I could do of explaining how it works. Would you like to watch this video? Yeah, I'll watch the video. Cool. And oh, by the way, if you want to build this business, this video is what you would send to people. That's teach to teach. So now when that person observes the video, they're not as inclined to wonder, is this a really good video or not? They're more inclined to think, could I do this? Could I get people to watch this video? So that's an example of teach to teach. So how do you handle questions? You're going to get questions, right? Am I saying not to answer them? Never. I'm not saying to ever ignore your rep's questions, ever. I never ignored any rep's questions, ever. But how you handle them will tell you if you're duplicatable and scalable or you're not. So if your primary way to answer a rep's questions is to hop on the phone with them and just have a big, long discussion, you are not duplicatable. You're also not scalable. And you're also going to be pretty frustrated if you're not already. Okay. And so how do you handle them? Number one, have a solid fast start. And we're actually going to talk about that, I think next week. I think next week we talk about fast start a little bit or something like that. And so a fast start doesn't have every single thing they need to know for their career, but it tells them what to do. What should I do right now if I want to build a business? And by the way, you need to weave culture into your fast start and say, hey, if you're someone that building a business isn't your focus right now, totally cool. We appreciate you. Thanks for being here. Have that in your fast start. Why not? And then say, if you want to build a business, here's our suggestions. Here's what to do. Here's what to plug into. Here's what, you know, here's how to share. Here's where to get conversations, or here's where to get scripts, whatever your process is. Do not hit them with too much. So when I'm personally coaching someone, I'll say, okay, pretend I just joined your team. Send me my welcome email, because I know you all have it. And I've had some people send me a welcome email with 32 attachments. I'm already out. No thanks. So most personality types, you send them a welcome email with 32 attachments and 55 links, they're out, man. And the one personality type that is in, the engineer type, the green, right? They will go through each and every one. And at the end of 3 months, when they're finished, then they may start to do the business. Be very aware of what you're sending in a fast start and what you're sending in that welcome email. Needs to be able to be absorbed easily, not huge, not every comprehensive thought you've ever had about your company. Okay. Now, how you handle questions is there's two main sources. So if a rep comes to you with a question and you know it's in the fast start, point them back to the fast start. And I know that may not feel as good, especially if you have a team that is used to you holding their hand and sabotaging them. I got to drill this, because if I don't clue you in that sabotage is what's happening when you give a ton of personal time to each and every rep that asks for it. By the way, some people, they want attention more than production. How are you going to out-attention them? You can't, if you're so giving of your personal time. And so NICE stands for nothing inside me cares enough. Because if you cared enough about them and building their business, you would teach them in a duplicatable way. You would teach them in a scalable way. So you have to get used to pointing. What would the gym owner do? The gym owner would say, yeah, we got personal training, we got spin class, we got this, we got that, we got this, right? So you got to get used to pointing. Point to the fast start. Point to, or point to a library. So maybe they ask you a question that's not in the fast start. That'll happen all the time. Highly suggest you build a library. And so most of the time, people would ask me a question, I'd say, oh, great question. I actually have a video that answers that question perfectly. And here's where you can get the video. I'll send you the link. And oh, by the way, teach to teach. When you have someone in your team ask you that same question, you send them that same video. Now, what if they ask me a question that wasn't in the library? The worst answer I can give is just answer it right on the phone. Oh, yeah, let me tell you about it for the next 45 minutes in a non-duplicatable, non-recorded fashion that you can't rewind, you can't replay, you're not going to remember by the time we even hang up, right? You can never share it with another rep because you're not going to remember, so you're going to point them to me and they'll also forget it. I'll do it in a non-duplicatable, non-scalable way that's not recorded, they can't push play, they can't rewind, okay? So if they ask me a question that's not in my library, I'll say, you know what? That's a good question, and I bet others may have that same question. I'm going to shoot you a quick video. Click, shoot the video, send it to them, teach to teach, and say, hey, here's the answer to that question. And by the way, if you ever have someone in your team ask you that same question, send them that video. This making sense? Yeah. I mean, some of you that have been with me for years are saying, I need to rewatch this. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you have a team of 2,000 plus, then I'm going to make a prediction. You are not happy with Facebook groups. Yeah, because they're not great anymore. They're just not. They're good for temporary stuff like Top Earner Success School. Difficult for long-term stuff like our Rank Makers. It's one of the reasons we opened Rank Makers University, because it's just no longer simple. One, the search function sucks. Two, you have very little control. I heard of a rep maybe about a month ago that lost his group of 22,000 reps, lost, you know, he was the admin, lost it because he did something and got censored, right? Censorship, lack of control, lack of transparency. So what if a rep tells you, hey, I watched the Fast Start. Well, with our white label system, you would know if that was true. You'd be able to see, well, looks to me like you finished modules one and two, but you didn't get into three. Would you have time to get into that? And so if you want more control, more transparency, and fully branded to you, then you may want to consider our white label system. We have, I don't know how long it is, but we have a little demo on there if you want to check it out, higdongroup.com/demo. If your team is less than 2,000, it may or may not make sense. I don't know. That's kind of you can obviously still view it. Okay. So how to run contests the right way. And I do share this. I believe it's page 9192. Yep. I do share page 9192 of our leadership book, which we also, I sometimes forget to say this, we also do have in Spanish. One of our clients actually funded this to be translated into Spanish. And so how to run contests the right way. So when you think about a contest, I want you to think about get more people doing a little. I want to get a lot of people doing a little. If I can get a large percentage of the people in the team to do just a little bit, that's actually way more than getting your top performers to do 10% more. Okay. So get a lot doing a little. So this is the way. We've tested every way of doing contests. This is the way. I'm telling you, if you do it this way, very good chance that you will absolutely crush it and have your best month ever. And so first you go to your team and you say, hey, we're going to do a contest in a week and it's going to be prizes. It's going to be awesome. If you want to play in that contest, all you gotta do is get X, right? So you run a 7-day pre-contest. And the 7-day pre-contest, all they have to do is get one customer or one rep or whatever small amount, small unit of measurement that you're looking for. I would not have it, I would have it be a result, not activity. So I wouldn't say prospect 10 people. I would have it be an actual result. So get a customer, get a rep. There are other ways to do accountability challenges. We won't talk about that tonight, but contests. Pre-contest, if you want to play in that contest, all you got to do, get a customer, get a rep, get two, maybe, you know, that's up to you. But I'm trying to get a lot of people to do a little. What'll happen? And by the way, you do not ever tell them what prizes are going to be in the contest next week, because most people are playing to prove they're going to lose. Most people are not playing to win. They show up in life to find what's wrong. They show up in life to find why bother. So do not tell them what prizes are next week. All you tell them that there is prizes. I don't want them to rule themselves out, because you may say, oh, we'll be giving away a Gucci bag. And someone will be like, oh, I don't even like Gucci. And they won't even play. Like they couldn't sell it or something. You see what I mean? So don't tell them what is, and I'm not saying it has to be a Gucci bag. We'll get to that. So pre-contest, we're going to have a contest next week. For you to participate in the contest, get one customer, get one rep, or whatever makes sense for you. Sell one bottle of shampoo or sell one kit or whatever. Okay, that's up to you. And so every person that does that, you applaud them in the group, in the team group, yay. And then you can move them into a temporary contest group. It's got to be temporary. So you can move them into a Facebook group, those who qualify. And what you'll find is by the end of the pre-contest, you're already happy. You're already like, dang, Sally, I thought Sally quit years ago. Sally got somebody. Wow, this is amazing. So people will come out of the woodwork. Because why? Because unlike all of your other contests, they believe they can win this one. They believe they can get one. And so you'll have people get one that never got one. So all of a sudden, you got all this new volume, boom, moving into the group. So then you start the actual contest. And you can have the contest, at least the first part, be like everybody else, right? So how do most companies do it? They do, you know, first place, second place, third place. When you have a contest that says first place, second place, third place, 90% of the organization won't even participate. Because they'll think, oh, I can't do that. Remember, how do we get a lot of people doing a little? And so you can have the top three, that's fine, or top five or whatever, but also have, if you do this, you get this. So let's say your pre-contest was get one new customer with 100 volume or whatever. In the contest, maybe it's get two customers, 200 total volume, and you'll be on this exclusive training with Ray, or you'll be on this exclusive book club, or you'll be in this exclusive interview with the CEO or CMO or CTO or COO or whatever, right? And it's important. I don't want that minimum prize to, I want it to be cost effective or free, okay? So I don't want, don't be like, hey, if you get two, I'm going to send you beach towels. Well, don't do that, because that may not make financial sense. I don't want, these contests shouldn't be having you go broke. It should be actually making you money. And by the way, I'm not a fan of having humongous prizes, because remember, whatever you do for your team, they think they have to do. So if you give away a new Tesla, that may get some people excited. Interestingly enough, if they don't think they can win, they won't even play, even if it's a Tesla. They've done studies on, psychology studies on that, on regardless of prize, it's like, you know, is a complexity of task, like people that don't think they can win won't play. But if you do a Tesla, they're going to think, oh man, if I want to run a contest and I got to do a Tesla, geez, I can't do that. And so they don't have to be. So my favorite type of prizes for the first, second, third are, could be a hotel stay at the next event, could be dinner with me at the next event, could be a limo ride to dinner at the next event. So, you know, keep in mind, I didn't announce it in the pre-contest. So I've had people win a contest that weren't going to the event that get their ticket because they wanted to have dinner. That's a win. That's a win. That minimum prize of if you get two, you get X. I prefer that not to cost you anything. I don't want it to be a pencil or a pen or a rubber band or a hair tie or anything like that. I'd like it to be something with a set cost. So for example, like if one thing I do with teams is if they buy 25 or more of any of my books, I'll do a team training for them. Right. So think about that. If you had 1,000 people qualify and you bought 25 books, that'd be a set cost, a couple hundred bucks, and I could do a training. That would not be a very low cost, a set cost, regardless of how many people earned it. Right. Or go to your company and see if you can get the CEO or CMO, et cetera, and so forth. So they get an exclusive interview, or they get an exclusive, you know, fireside chat with the CMO. Right. That would be cool. Okay. And again, you're not announcing these in the pre-contest. And so what you'll get is, you know, you'll get your standard, you know, the usual suspects will run hard for the top three. Most people aren't going to run for the top three, but you'll get a whole bunch of new people running for that minimum prize of the get, you know, the free interview. Does that make sense? So April, it seems messed up to make people compete to eat dinner with me. Well, I mean, I would take them to a 5-star dinner, and it was typically like a $1,000 dinner. And so, so it's not like we're sitting at a buffet table or something, right? I would take them somewhere nice, and you can talk that up. But believe me, people will fight for that. And and so like I would have three different levels. So like, level one, maybe I cover their hotel, maybe, and they get dinner. Level two, and sometimes I would even have some cash in there, some play money. And so maybe it's, dinner, $500 and their hotel stay. Second place, maybe it's dinner and $200. Third place, dinner. And tell them, hey, this is where we'll be going, which is a very nice, restaurant. And so now this doesn't mean that we sit at the buffet table and say, oh, you're not in the group, right? We go off site and do something cool. Believe me, every person I ever did that with loved it. Loved it. They all took pictures. They loved it. Joe, the dinner on the yacht, was that awesome or what? It was amazing. We did a for people that bought a certain amount of our Time, Money, Freedom book, we rented a yacht and took them out. It was fun. It was cool. Host them at your place. That could be another option, right? And so, but you're getting the gist. Top three, get something super special, amazing that's gonna cost you, right? But I'm really focused on getting a lot of people doing a little. And so I told you, I knew today was big. I knew today was big. So thank you for hanging with me. So you learned how I blew it at first. The most important element, culture, the difference, lead source versus what you do with leads, work ethic duplication, personal time in your team, the best way to run contests. And by the way, we're coming to a close here. If you're over $250,000 a year in your business and would like my help personally, feel free to message me and I can talk to you about personal coaching. I don't do a lot of personal coaching anymore. I have a couple clients right now, but I have room for, a couple more. If you'd like that, if you're under that and you would like to not stop momentum and to stay in momentum and keep rocking and rolling, you may consider our inner circle. And that you can fill out the form at rayhigdoncoaching.com. Nothing to purchase, you just fill out the form, tell them what you're looking for, you get a free strategy call, and see if it's a fit for you. If it's not, then it's not. And if it is, then it may just change your life, like so many of our students. So this week's challenge, okay? Important to show gratitude where deserved. If you got value from this, feel free to tag me. I really do appreciate that. It's awesome. But it gets you in the habit of doing that. When I learn something from Grant, I tag him, I say it. When I learn something from Russell, I tag him, I say it. When I learn something from Tony, I tag him, I say it, right? So getting more in that habit, not just with me, but with anyone that you get value from. And so this is the final contest. Okay. I know next week is our, we have one more session. We got a Q&A, but this is the final contest here. Okay. And so we're looking for those that have gotten results since joining Tess. If you have gotten leads, signups, got out of your comfort zone, rank advance, transform something around your life, better relationship with your hubby or whatever, or you've created a result by going through Top Earner Success School, email us your results-based story. It's just one paragraph, no more than five sentences, right? So don't make this humongous, because I'm gonna guess that more than 15 of you will do this. It doesn't even require a video. You don't have to do a video. Okay. But what I'll talk about this because I'm going to give you a little bit of time here. So I'll coach you on how to crush this kind of thing in our final session, and it will be an awesome prize. It'll be worth playing. Going to give you plenty of time. It won't be due until next Thursday, March 24th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. So if you're watching this, you may want to set a reminder. Okay. Here's some this is some of my early examples. Prior to Tess, just so you kind of see, this is what we're looking for. Little paragraph, couple sentences. Prior to Tess, I had not recruited anyone. During Tess, by following Ray's teaching, I was able to rank advance, double my product sales, and personally recruit five reps. I now even have leads reaching out to me. Linda, which Linda, she was in our team and had never done a thing in her network marketing company for 2 years. Now, that's not totally true. She had attended events. She had bought trainings, but she hadn't produced a result in 2 years. She was terrified of picking up the phone. Since Top Earner Success School, she recruited two into her company with a third on the way, have more leads from her blog, and joining Ray and Tess has been the best investment I ever made in myself. Erica, who I know Erica went on to be Miss Tess one of the years. Top Earner Success School pushed me way out of my comfort zone. I'm so grateful. I made my first marketing videos, prospect 164 people in 6 days. Before she was only prospecting 2 to 3 a week, recruited 12 people into her team and rank advanced twice in under 90 days. Before Tess, I had 0 people in my team. How cool is that? And so these are examples. These are examples that I wanted to pull out from some of our earlier test sessions. And so I hope you're playing. Know that how you show up in here is how you show up out there. Again, tomorrow night, Thursday night, if you want to be on with Marley and I, higgingroup.com/YouTube. And then if you do just recognize that you want to crush it on Reels, we do have a special on a Reels program, higgingroup.com/Reels. So feel free to check that out if you would like. That's on sale tonight. We had it all day, but you're here tonight. So you got a few hours left on that if you want it, or I guess an hour and a half, higgingroup.com/Reels. And so know that I'm rooting for you. I know, like, I'm just not doing my job if I'm not tough on you. If I don't point out the obvious thing, you know, of how you're showing up, then I'm just not doing my job. I care about my job. I care about what I do. I care about, you know, how I show up in here and how I get to help you. I feel very blessed to be on a platform to help anybody, because that's what makes me feel good. I love seeing people create transformation. I love people seeing change their lives. That's what I'm here for. That's what I signed up for. And so I know that maybe it was uncomfortable me calling you out, but you know, I hope that you can understand my intention, and I hope it actually does. I hope it does help you. And so I appreciate you. All right. Cool. All right. Well, cool. Well, I hope you got value from this. I look forward to your feedback. And if you have some questions, post in the group and tag me, and I'll do my very best to answer them probably tomorrow morning, seeing the time. And so thank you so much. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you soon. Mm-hmm.